You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Hey, it's the unnamed interview show on OneOfUs.net. That actually is what it's called.
Is it?
We've only done one other episode before. It was with Joe Lansdale.
Oh.
Yeah?
But isn't that like a paradox that you've created by naming it?
Shut up. Damn it. Damn it, Sarah.
We've unhinged something horrible.
No, it's ironic.
Okay. I don't understand your humor.
I don't either. I don't even know why I said that in a bad English accent. We're here with Eric Zapata. Am I saying your last name right? Zapata?
You are, yeah. Okay. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Wow. Look at that. Yeah. That's quite a compliment.
Yeah, it's usually Zapata.
Oh, really?
Or, yeah.
Wasn't there a dictator named Zapata or something?
A Mexican revolutionary,
that's what
actually.
It is. Okay, see, that's
Emiliano Zapata.
Somewhere in my head, I knew that one,
yep.
And I had heard that.
He's like, very famous, very famous name in Mexico, actually.
Wait, I thought that's who we had on today. We're going to interview this guy. Let me hide my notes.
Oh, crap. Never mind. Obviously, Sarah's here with me.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, Sarah. Met Eric. Where did you meet Eric?
We met at HeroCon, which is a comic book / cosplay convention in Austin. I guess it's a yearly thing.
Yeah, it was its second year this year. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lots of fun.
It was. Just HeroCon. Hanging out. Eric, did you have a stall? Were you giving a show?
Yes, I was one of the featured guests this year, actually. A little bit of background. I was on a show. I'm a special effects makeup artist, and I was on a show called Face Off, which is a reality show on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Right?
Two seasons of it, yeah.
Which is my favorite reality TV show.
Oh, really? Is
yes.
it? Aw, that's so cool. Yeah.
This is
I'm being genuine here. It is my favorite reality
show. That's awesome. Yeah. So because of that, I've been able to do like fun conventions and stuff. Sometimes people let me, they'll have me come as a guest or do like workshops. So I've been riding that into the ground for the last few years, but I've been doing less of it obviously because I want to do more movie stuff. That's why I do what I do. I did HeroCon last year and they asked me to come back this year and I thought, why not? They're really sweet people.
You worked with Steve Busey in Museum of the Weird one time too.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I worked with actually Matt Valentine and Michael Faust. They're two makeup artists here. Also Face Off fame. And they were doing a project for him, and I was helping them out. So
okay.
Yeah.
So you say you do makeup. You do special effects makeup.
Yes.
More specifically.
Yes.
I mean, you're not somebody who's like, they need more rouge in their cheeks.
Yeah.
Nobody says rouge.
Do they not?
That's like from the 1930s. That's like what my grandma
said. I say a lot of things from the 1930s.
Yeah.
You haven't noticed a lot of my expressions are deader than people from the 1930s.
Well, you did call me the cat's pajamas.
I did. And you are, Sarah.
That's
you're the
adorable.
Bee's knees.
Do you have caramel candies in your purse?
I totally do.
Grandma, give us the Werther's.
That's awesome.
The Werther's originals are amazing. Okay.
They are.
Sorry for interrupting. So you're a special effects makeup artist.
Yes, special effects makeup, which means basically I do creatures, characters, and monsters, like that kind of thing, rather than, and also, you know, old age makeups, character makeups, out of kit makeups, not so much like the beautiful runway, awesome beauty makeups, which is also really amazing. I really respect that because I can't really do it that well. So I respect and love beauty makeup, but I fancy myself more special effects makeup.
And you said you were on two seasons of Face Off where the idea is like there's a panel of judges and you do a bunch of creations you've come up with on your own.
Yes.
And they get judged and there's one winner who is never seen again.
Basically, it's if you're familiar with Project Runway, it's a carbon copy of that, except it's instead of making dresses, we're making characters and monsters on a model, on a live model. So we get prompted with our challenge from Mackenzie Westmore of the Westmore makeup family. And she tells us, you know, this is your challenge, is to create this kind of character, or, you know, this kind of character. And it's either a team challenge or, you know, you do it as a single person. And from there you have a day, or actually 2 or 3 days, depending on what the challenge is, to create a full character head to toe. So it's a full character with a backstory and a reason and, you know, a specific design. And it has to all kind of make sense and look beautiful as well as, or not so much beautiful, but at least put together.
So when you were starting to figure out that, okay, I think this is actually what I want to do.
Yeah.
Getting the first glimmers of that. Mm-hmm. Were you like a horror movie fan? Were you a like space movie fan?
I was like,
what was making you go, I think I could do that?
I was like an overall film fan. I loved movies and I had grown up you know, watching movies, obviously, like everybody, being influenced by film and cartoons. But the thing that really broke the camel's back was I worked in a... Do you guys remember video rental stores?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
No, I'm too young.
Oh, okay.
I'm so lame. I used to just hang out at video rental stores.
Right.
And walk around until I saw someone who was having trouble deciding on something.
Yeah.
And then I would come up and give them advice. They're like, oh, you work here? I'm
right.
Like, no. No, I just have nothing better to do.
So,
I miss the smell of it.
Oh, yeah. My God. Yeah. It's so amazing. Like... I can't even remember what it was like fully, but I know that it was just such a joyful experience. And mm-hmm. I was also that guy who went around telling people what to rent or giving them advice, except I did work there. And I worked at this place called Video Gallery in Victoria, Texas, which is where I'm originally from. And the guy who owned it actually, I had been going there since I was a kid, but a new guy had taken over the lease of the place, and he kept the name and all this. And his name was Mike Contreras, and he brought in, like, underground stuff and, like, smutty porn and, like, anime and just, like, all this awesome, like, foreign films.
All the stuff that changes a young boy.
Right, absolutely. And that's not fair, actually. I think the smut was already there. But he brought in even more interesting porn. But there was, like, it was just, like, it turned into this awesome, like, more so underground, like, video rental place. And the people of Victoria didn't really appreciate that. So it was a really, like, slow-paced place. But I got to work there. My big brother worked there. And then when he went to college, I got his job. And we were just friends with Mike and his family. And it was very much a family operation. And I just, you know, got paid through my whole high school career to, you know, that was my part-time job. I would go to school. After school, I would go home and sculpt or draw or do something. All right, and then I would go to work to the video store and just watch movies and just, you know, get inspired. And that's when I learned about, like, behind-the-scenes features. And I saw what, like, you know, all these people, all these artists were getting to do this for a living. And, like, it just seemed unfair. And I was like, there has to be a way for me to get my foot into that door. And that's when I decided that's what I wanted to do.
So, like, special editions of horror movies were, like, the best thing in the world, because they would always have those features,
man,
that were like, here's how we did the latest
Absolutely.
Mask on this creature.
Yeah. And Monster Squad wasn't... Remember when the double disc of Monster Squad came out?
Oh, yeah.
It was
sure
oh
it.
My God, it was that changed my life big, because I wasn't really familiar with that movie, and then when the special features came or the special edition came out, I was like, oh my God, redone versions of all the Universal monsters. And like, so many people who are like influential artists now, like Steve Wang and all these amazing like artists who do special effects now, they worked on that movie when they were younger. So it was like, that was actually a really pivotal time for like creature suit movies and stuff. Like, that really changed a lot for so.
So your holy grail is the perfect set of Wolfman nards.
Yeah. Oh my God. And that, well, everything the Gilman in that movie is just incredible. Oh my God, it's so amazing. But
Did you watch all those old Universal monster movies before that growing up?
I didn't really, honestly. I was terrified of horror films when I was growing up.
I know,
so,
I was too.
So that was it's actually kind of a weird god complex as far as like. Now I get to create monsters for horror movies, so that gives me a power over them, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah, my mother, who's a therapist, had lots of opinions about why I love horror movies.
Oh, it's really interesting, actually. I totally agree with, there's a lot of psychological, you know, stuff going on there. But it's, for me, I grew up terrified of Chucky and Jason and Freddy, and even the 80s, you know, they're supposed to be a little bit more goofy, those 80 horror icons, but Eva just terrified me. But I did grow up loving, like, Jim Henson movies and the Ninja Turtles, specifically the 1990 Ninja Turtles movie. Like, that movie, you know, I grew up believing those were real, real Ninja Turtles, you
Wait,
know?
They
so,
were?
Yeah, exactly.
They all live in the sewers?
I was telling other kids when I was a kid that there was the Escape from Witch Mountain movies.
Oh, yeah.
Totally based on a true story.
I believe
it.
Yeah, has been covering up these kids
absolutely.
And their telekinetic powers.
So what were some of the first creatures that you created? Did you, like, try to emulate something from Monster Squad or something like or Jim Henson?
I had actually one of the first things that I was like bent on building. I was like, I have to build these one for one. Pardon me. And I wasn't gonna let anything stop me. Was not something from a film, actually. It was Tom Servo and Crow T Robot.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
From Mystery Science Theater.
I love them so
and
much.
Actually,
I'm such a Misty.
I would have to say that had way more influence on me than any like movie did, like blockbuster movie or horror movie did, because of the DIY nature of that show. It was just like, I could see the shoestrings being pulled, you know, to make that show happen. And I was like, I could make this stuff. You know, it's made out of bowling pins and, you know,
yeah.
bubble gum machines.
Machine.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, but just also that show just speaks to me in so many, on so many different levels, and like that's a huge part of my childhood. So I just wanted to make those robots. I had to. So I found like these different websites and eBay. I found all the original parts and researched it. And thankfully, the internet was a thing by this time, so it wasn't that difficult. But I built those as well as I could, and sold them, you know, for like $500 a piece on eBay. And that was like my first taste of like using art to make a profit, and like, but also using it in a way that like I made something I was super passionate about. It wasn't just like bullshit, like, you know, I have to make this art piece to make a living. It was like, I wanted to make it so bad. I made them and then they became money. And I used that money to like buy more parts to make another Tom Servone Crow, but also, also to buy art supplies and stuff, you know, because that's just what I wanted to do.
That was, I would often credit Mr. Science Theater as the reason I'm here now. Doing
really?
This,
oh, that's
like,
awesome.
I got invited to be like on a public access show that made fun of movies, basically.
Oh man.
That were funny. And I was like, oh, well, it's not quite Mystery Science Theater, but I can do that.
Oh, absolutely.
In fact, we still to this day, every time we do a commentary track for a Universal movie,
yeah,
I just can't help myself.
Oh, you have to rip on it.
Universal logo
yeah.
comes up, you go, the nicest weather the earth has ever had. as our little tip of the hat to
that's
the guys.
So awesome. Yeah, actually, my Mystery Science Theater love probably started with this island, with the movie, with the Mystery Science movie.
Yeah.
So I started watching Mike episodes and then learned about Joel and then went back and rewatched them, because it was when I started watching it was on Sci-Fi, which was made me so happy when I ended up on a Sci-Fi Channel show, because I was like, I'm on the same network that I started watching Mystery Science Theater. That was like more important to me than being on the show.
I'm like Michael J. Nelson.
Yeah. I'm like one of the guys.
We actually had Mary Jo Peele on a podcast.
Shut up.
We
oh my God.
We did?
Yeah. Before you came along.
Oh, and then I came on and you're like, we don't need another funny lady.
That's what happened. Sure. Yes. Or she moved back to Minneapolis.
It's a really influential show, but there. So I have actually this awesome story where I was attending a Master Pancake at one of the draft houses in town, and they were doing a Casino Royale with Joel Hodgson there to do the riffing.
I saw one of them with Joel, and I can't remember what movie it was.
Oh,
it was a while ago. Hood or something.
Yeah, they'd done it before with him, and and he had come back to do it. And I was like, my brother just moved back, and that's the whole reason I love Mystery Science was because of my brother. So I was like, we got to go relive our MST days and go, you know, see Joel live. But the tickets were sold out for the event, but we could still do the meet and greet with Joel. So I brought. I have a whole box full of crow parts that I was just waiting to build a new crow. And so I took some parts with me and had him sign the floral trays that, you know, crows made out of. And we were like, oh, we met Joel and he was so nice. And we were hanging out in the bar, you know, because we couldn't go into the theater. And we were talking to this girl who we just met there about how, you know, being fans and why it was so important to us. And then I just felt this hand on my shoulder touch me and a really soft voice just say, hey guys,
that's a good joke.
We have some extra seats in the front row next to like me and the other riffers. Do you guys want to come watch the movie? And we were like, I looked up and saw Joel and I was like, hi. Oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. And we were like, yes, of course we want to do that. So he went in, they actually set up like foldable, you know, unfolding chairs for us and like made new seats and right in the front row. And I was like, I'm in the front row of a theater watching Joel riff a movie, and I was like, this is as close as I'll ever get to being on the satellite of love watching Joel. And I was just like, I was beside myself. I just couldn't believe it was happening. And that was just like, I felt like my whole life was like leading up to that moment of like building those things. And
we used to hang out with those guys a lot back
in the
day.
Oh, that's so cool.
But like, I actually, me and Martin Thomas, who is on Double Toasted and occasionally on this site, got to do not with one of Joel or somebody, but with the crew. We got to do one of those bring your own ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so the movie the audience chose for us was Riding the Bus with My Sister.
Oh,
I've never seen that.
Okay, you know what it is though?
No.
It's where Rosie O'Donnell plays severely mentally retarded woman.
Oh.
And like Andy McDowell's her older sister who's like taking care of her, and you, it's just, what are you supposed to do? We're like, this is the point we just gave up, and we're just like, this is not going to be completely PC, folks.
Yeah.
To do this. So everyone's like, okay, it'll be our secret, right? Nobody's going to say anything. We're going to be a little bad tonight, all right? And all apologies. We get out after it's over, and what's going on at the Alamo Draft House? They're having a special disability film festival.
No!
perfect.
Like, with all these people with disabilities of various types that right outside the door.
Do you think that's why they chose that movie?
I don't know. But that it was a very disturbing moment. It was life going, you're back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was God, absolutely.
You're going to hell, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
And Rosie O'Donnell's going to be waiting for you.
I think every member of that audience averted their eyes. Yeah. They will just stared right down on the ground as they walked out of that theater.
You're like, well, we were already going to hell, so it's fine.
And Chris never watched a movie again.
Did you ever film anything with your robots?
That's probably what I wanted to do, but I never, like, filmed anything or put them on a green screen or anything.
It sounded like you were on the path to start being your own, maybe, like, experimental filmmaker. Yeah. What was that turning point that made you go off to, like, no, I'm specifically going to start working on other people's things and doing makeup?
That's a really good point, because, yeah, there was a good moment there where I was like, oh, I'm going to be a film creator, director, what have you. But I think what really started straying me towards making art for movies as opposed to, like, making the film was I couldn't ignore the joy that I got from using my hands to create a physical thing. And even though with film you get to see all these things come together that you're a big influence on, and you get to decide a lot of the crazy factors about it, it still wasn't as incredible as it felt when I got to touch it or, like, see it from beginning to end, you know, like, sure, feeling the clay, making the thing, and seeing it with my own eyes and controlling every aspect of it. It's very much a control freak thing about it, because when you're directing, you're at the mercy of all the other artists, you know, and all the best directors know that, you know, they try not to, you know, not to push too hard, or they know when to, like, you know, let you do your thing, and they know when the piece is going to take on a different form than what they had in mind, because there's a different artist touching it.
Was doing haunted houses your gateway into doing more horror-oriented?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that and the video store, like Freddy vs. Jason had come out around the same time, and I wasn't really familiar with those. I mean, I knew those characters, but the franchises, I hadn't really seen every film. But when I heard that movie was coming out, I really got into horror, because I made myself, like, watch both franchises all the way through and just fell in love with, you know, all of the films beginning to end. And so because of that, I got into horror and started doing more haunted houses with my local high school. And we had done this one year we did a haunted house at a funeral home. It was like an old funeral home that they were going to turn into offices in the downtown Victoria. It was like, well, we're going to redo all this stuff anyway, so if y'all fuck anything up. Sorry, can I say curse words?
You can say any fucking thing.
Oh,
you
my God. Okay.
Oh, good, good. Perfect. So they, they told us we could basically do whatever we want in there. So we built all these things, and I got my own Freddy versus Jason room, because I was, like, way into it at the time, and yeah, like, doing the masks for that, I got to do the Freddy makeup and do the silicone burns and stuff. That was, and I got to make my own Freddy gloves, and, you know, I taught myself how to, like, solder and stuff to, you know, solder the blades on. And it really started as, like, a just overall doing art stuff, and then slowly morphed into doing horror. And that's when I got into, like, creating characters and stuff, more so than, like, just, you know, creating something, a replica of something from another film.
So what was your first opportunity to actually work on a film and do makeup for that? And what was the makeup you were doing?
That's a good question. Well, professionally or in any capacity?
However, in any capacity, yeah.
So me and my friends, we were all, you know, fancied ourselves filmmakers when we were in high school. And we had, I don't know how we did this, but we had convinced this very wealthy man who owned this flower company in Victoria to let us make some spots for his company, because he wanted some new commercials, like online commercials. And he just gave us money. He gave these kids money to do whatever we wanted. And we had one commercial was about, like, a gangster who was, like, delivering flowers to, like, an old godfather who he wanted to, like, see die. And then the flowers exploded and, like, his house exploded, and we made this miniature house. And it was weird. Like, I don't know why he let us do it. And we told him the concepts and stuff, and he was like, sounds great, dude. It's like this old Southern Texas dude. And he loved them. And another character was, it was like this woman was coming home, and there was, like, flower petals in her room, and it looked like there was, like, a weird, you know, intruder waiting for her in her room. And she turned on the light, and it was, like, her older, like, husband who was, like, waiting for her on the bed, like, covered in flower petals. And so I did, like, this old age makeup on my friend Shannon, who just, it looks horrible. Like, now I go bang him, he looks like a burn victim. He doesn't even look like an old man.
Maybe,
but
an old man who was a burn victim.
Maybe, yeah.
That's a character right there.
Maybe that's the story.
That's
there.
Crazy, right? Like, I'm already a little freaked out thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he smells weird. Then he tells really boring stories about the old days.
I wish we had thought that much about it, but no, it was just a really poorly done makeup. But it was fun. Like, that was the first time we had produced something, and, like, you know, as goofy and as silly as they were and low budget, you know, we were putting a lot of work into them. We built all the miniatures to explore that guy's house and did the makeups and the mold and stuff. So I was pretty, like, you know, pretty sure at that point that that's what I was going to do. So I had signed up for the Tom Savini special effects makeup school, which is up near, like, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
He's
one of the masters.
He is. And that was another thing about the horror films was, like, you know, watching behind the scenes and seeing Tom Savini's work and, you know, realizing he had a school. I was like, okay, I'm going there. And I had even told my parents, like, you know, if y'all don't want to send me to a 2-year, you know, associate's degree art program, you know, I know that that's a lot to ask. So I'll do community college. I'll do some regular college if you want me to. And they were like, fuck that. Like, if you just want to do this, just go do that. Cause you're just going to waste time and money.
Like a trade school. If it's what you're excited about.
Yeah,
doing.
Man. I'm a big advocate of, like, not necessarily schools in general, but trade schools. If you can help it, like, and not even film school, really. Like, I mean, for what we do in film and art in general, like, you just really don't need school at all, which no one will tell you, but really, you do not need school to
school
do.
Yeah. Ever. Okay.
No.
So you learn by doing and having the willpower to do. The hardest part
absolutely.
Is kicking your own ass, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And which is, like, at school, that's I got really lucky because at the Savini school, as much as I don't think you need it, I went at a really magical time where all the instructors were amazing and I had an amazing class there with me. Like, you know, some people get, you know, they get into a really niche program like that and, like, they have really admirable aspirations, but they're just doing it because they don't know what else to do. You know, they're not really that passionate about it. And they're not really willing to do the work that once they realize, like, holy shit, you have to work so hard you might die to do this. I'm not willing to do that. And that's fine. But a lot of the times, you know, they're getting school paid for by their parents and they're not paying for it and all this stuff. So the classes are a mix, you know, it's a mix of, like, kind of spoiled kids who don't know what they want to do and are getting this paid for. And then kids who are like, I'm paying for this shit. Like, I'm going to do this program all the way through and, like, stay after school and do all this crazy stuff. So I had a whole semester of those kind of students and it was amazing. Like, I learned so much in those 2 years that I really got lucky, but again, you don't need that. Like, I learned more in the year after that working in a shop for Bob Kurtzman than I did at school. But it was just a really magical time. So I wouldn't give it up for anything.
So when you got your first paid gig,
mm-hmm.
or at least you want to get, let's say you're right there where you want to get your first paid gig.
Mm-hmm.
How do you put together a resume for something like that? Yeah. Did you have a website of stuff you had put together or masks and what have you?
I had, so again, another story of right place, right time. But also, you know, my work did speak for me a lot in this situation. But one of our instructors at school, he had come from Ohio where he was working for the shop called Precinct 13. It's now called Creature Corps. But it was ran by Bob Kurtzman, who Bob Kurtzman used to run KMB Effects with Greg Nicotero and Howard Berger. So all those guys. So he broke off and went back to Ohio and opened up his own shop. So this was 2 hours from Pittsburgh, or no, 4 hours from Pittsburgh. So this guy would go from Ohio to Pittsburgh to teach at Savini and then go back to Ohio. And his name was Alan Tuskus. And we would hang out with him and drink beers, like do all this stuff with these teachers we weren't supposed to do because it was like just the school in this like old steel town in Pennsylvania. No one really cared what you did. So we would hang out with Al and he would like, you know, just like shoot the shit and we would drink with him. And he was like, he just got to know me and my friend Ian and a couple of other friends, and he just knew that we weren't there just to be there. You know, he knew how passionate we were. So when he went back to work for Bob full time, they had an opening position, and like even not even really as a result of looking at my work, but more so just shooting the shit and getting to know me, they had an opening, and he called and he was like, "Hey man, we got an opening. Like, I know you just graduated. You want a gig?" And I was like, "Yeah." And
what else did I do that for?
Yeah, exactly. And he was and. It was cool because the girl that I was dating at the time, he offered her the same gig because he knew we were dating. And because he did that, we got to stay together and now we're getting married in August.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah.
Oh, wait. I thought you were saying you guys were then had to compete for the gig.
No,
he's like
no.
a dick. He's like, this is going to be fun. You know those two are dating now, lovey-dovey? We only have one position, sorry.
We're going to make them mortal enemies.
Yeah, we're going to put you in the pit with those big fighting sticks from Star Trek.
No, we fell in love.
Two men enter, one man leaves.
So yeah, it was meant to be. It was a really cool story, but I didn't get to show my work. I didn't show my resume. It was just Al knew me. He knew firsthand the kind of artist I was, and you know what I wanted to do with my career. And he just thought, you know, let's throw this kid a bone.
And what was that project?
It was they were doing a haunted house line of like new costumes and characters, and they needed more manpower because they were like behind on orders and stuff. So they were hiring paid interns actually, which was cool. Which is unheard of, like paid interns in an effect shop, like what the hell? So we said yes, like right away, just picked up, moved from Pittsburgh to, and they put us in housing and stuff. Like it was rad for only like, it was supposed to be 2 months and it was only 2 months. And then after the 2 months, you know, Bob was like, you know, after some of the Halloween stuff died down, he was like, well, we got some film projects. So we were working on this project called The Woman, which was a Lucky McKee movie.
I have it in my collection.
I worked on that. I mean, it should be in those credits.
It's a really good movie.
It's a really great movie. Yeah. I was very surprised with it.
It's funny because I'm not crazy about the source material it came from. But then it made a good movie.
So no, it made like, a... Oh, and Lucky McKee, like it's...
Yeah, and Lucky McKee's great.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah.
I actually know Angela Bettis pretty well.
Really?
So, like, it's like they have that special relationship.
Very
Never
cool.
Never met Lucky, but Angela's sweet.
I didn't get to meet Lucky either. They were filming on location and they were in Michigan and they weren't too far from us, I think, but you know, we were doing all the shop stuff. So I was in shop, helping them with that. And then we got another gig while we were there called John Dies at the End, where we were making,
I still haven't seen that, but I'm a fan of the author.
It's great.
So I had a conversation with, and now I'm just blanking on his name, the director. Edited the Phantasm movies.
And Beast
Don Coscarelli.
Don, right.
Just recently at South by Southwest. And I was like, hey, because they were screening the new special edition of Phantasm. I was like, did it ever bug you that the show Supernatural seemed to lift an awful lot from Phantasm 2 especially? And he's like, kind of conspiratorially is like, oh man, it fucking pissed me off.
Like,
I didn't care that they did it. What I cared was I kept trying to contact them and say, hey, let's get in touch. I'd love to talk to you guys, or maybe give me an opportunity to direct an episode. Yeah. They wouldn't even return his calls.
Aww. Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Shut up.
But then I was like, was John Dies at the End kind of your, in a way, a lot of the stylistic stuff's in that has a lot of Supernatural.
It
like,
does.
Kind of like jabs. I was like, was that intentional? He's like, oh, fuck yeah. I was like, they're going to steal from me. I'm going to steal from them.
Nice. Dude, that is rare. Why would you?
I still need to see that movie.
It's fun.
I didn't
it's
know it fun. Was like a riff on Supernatural.
Well, I mean, not
to
completely.
To an extent, yeah.
And when I was watching it, I'm going, this reminds me, like, there's just tonal stuff in there that you're like, huh. Yeah, the two brothers, Supernatural Hunters. Yeah.
No, it's people. That's a really good that you drew those lines. I wouldn't have even thought of that. And that he was like, just, you know, admitted. He was
firmly
like, fuck yeah. And he's an old school filmmaker. He's like, and he was so sweet. Like, he's such a sweet guy. So it's like, to piss him off, you got to like try really hard, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, he couldn't be sweeter.
Yeah.
Because that's not the third or fourth time I had talked to him. It was at South by then. It was the first time I ever had anything interesting to say to him.
You were drunk the other two times.
Oh, well, I think I was drunk that time, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's when you say interesting things.
Yeah.
It was South by Southwest. So statistically speaking... I was, and like, it was like at 2 a.m, so it seems unlikely that I wasn't.
There was, so when they premiered John Dies at South by the year it came out, and so that was when we had moved to Austin from Ohio, so we were like, oh man, they're going to premiere, it'd be cool to see our names on the screen, you know, the first year we're here in Austin. So we emailed Bob, and we told him, hey, is there any way you can get us into the screening? We didn't have badges. And he just, like, right away forwarded it to Don. And then I got an email from Don Coscarelli. And I was like, oh, my God. I didn't think that was going to happen. And he was like, hey, Eric, I would love to get you in. Like, you and Sarah are in. We'll get you two passes. Meet me at, I don't know where he was. He was, like, staying downtown somewhere. It was, like, the Roaring Fork. He was staying near there. So he's like, meet me at the Roaring Fork. And I went down the Roaring Fork and just hung out with Don for, like, an hour and had some drinks with him. And he was like, thank you so much for working on the movie. It's, like, I love this movie. And y'all's work was so awesome. And, like, I was low in the totem pole. Like, I was a dude running molds and, like, you know, doing really, like, grunt work. But he treated me like I was one of the head artists, you know. He was such a sweet guy and so sweet to, like, give us passes to go see the premiere. And afterwards we came out and, you know, just like so high off of that experience. And then We went up to Don, or no, we were going to like kind of duck out and leave because all these people were swarming and I wanted to talk to him about stuff. And he like worked his way through the crowd and came up to us before we got to leave. And he's like, "Hey, what'd you guys think of the movie?" And we were just like, "Oh my God, how like, how fucking sweet is that?" To like, for him to like go out of his way to like, you know, see us again and tell us bye and ask us what we thought and our opinion. And
well, he's such a great example of like that DIY director. His career, and he's never lost any of his passion for it.
Oh, yeah.
He's never been a guy that Hollywood goes, "Yeah, we should get Don Coscarelli on this." No, if he wants to get a movie made, he always has had to pull himself up by his bootstraps.
Yeah, yeah.
And get, you know, go and get the money from people, person
absolutely.
To person, and put that film together himself. Yeah. With a spit and chewing gum.
Very true. He's still that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's still that guy, and he's so good at it.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, just like, "Hey, man, I do this because I have, it's my passion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else I could do."
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like that's kind of like where you found yourself at this point in your life.
Absolutely.
Like, I can't imagine doing anything else but this.
Yeah, no, and you know, you find yourself in situations where that might not be the case, you know, where you think, "Oh, I might have to get a second job, or I might have to get a regular job." And there was a year when I moved to – the year I moved to Austin from Ohio, my career kind of took a slump because I was trying to get my foot in this scene.
Mm.
And for a year, I you know, was trying to get film work, and I had nothing. So I had to go get a job at, like, a toy store up north, and I was just miserable, like miserable every day. And,
Terra Toys?
No, I would have loved working at Terra Toys. It was this place called Learning Express.
Oh, fair.
That's up off Research, like really close to here. So, and like the people who ran it were super sweet. They ran a great company and stuff, but it was just, you know, it was just retail. It wasn't the fact that I didn't like the people who ran it or the people I worked with.
Yeah, well, somebody you'd have a great job, like, you know, when you quit, you had like a set up a bucket full of fake blood over the door.
Yeah.
And now you're like, cash or credit.
Yeah. It was just a good reminder of like, and that's not to shit on people who do retail. It takes a special person. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for people who don't do something creative, which retail can be creative if you want it to be. But, you know, it just wasn't my thing. So it was like regular work, you know, doing retail. And I was like, "Man, I forgot what this is like. And I'm never going to do this again." I was like,
retail is like a special kind of hell if you're not cut out for it.
Oh, yeah.
And I was lucky because, you know, before I got into movies, I got to work at the video store, which was like working for this awesome, you know, indie film guy who was like getting me into underground movies and stuff. And so it was like, that wasn't a real part-time job. I really lucked out, you know, getting into that scene. So it was like, I never had really had a real shitty job. And then I had a shitty job and I was like, "Nope, I'm not doing this."
I'm going to be a special.
Whatever it takes,
sometimes,
man.
It takes a shitty job.
It does.
I don't fucking want to do
this.
I
may not have done the full 4-year college thing, but now I'm going to live on ramen for a while.
Yeah, dude. There's,
so I can do what I want.
I had a person ask me, it was at a convention, I think at HeroCon. They were like, "You know, I just became, you know, I want to be an artist, working artist. What's your advice? Like, what do I do? I'm not finding work." And I'm like, "Fucking get a job, dude. Like, don't kill yourself. Don't like go into poverty and don't go into debt, you know, unless you go to school like me." But, you know, they were just miserable. And I was like, "Look, you have to live, right? You have to have some kind of income." And I was like, "Be a functioning part of society. Go get a job, even if it's a shitty job you hate, even if it's for a month, 2 months, or a year. And that will be the most, like, electrifying jolt that you need to get your fucking ass moving and doing what you want to do."
Really letting yourself know that if you don't get moving now, this is your future.
Absolutely. There's no better way to, like, to get yourself going than experiencing that firsthand. And they were like, "Oh, my God." They weren't expecting that. They were expecting me to say, like, you know, "Draw every day." And yeah, do that stuff. Like, make art every day and do that. But, like, you got to live, too, you know? Like, take care of yourself. Don't be on the streets. Don't
be realistic. Don't. Your parents aren't going to pay your rent for you forever.
Absolutely. Yeah. And more.
No, Sarah.
Yeah.
Because someday they'll die.
No, they won't.
Yes. And soon. I mean, universally speaking.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just like a little speck in time.
Of things, of course. Yeah.
Now, that being said, time isn't actually linear, so technically they're alive forever and ever.
Yay!
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know how I got off on that digression.
Multiple time universes.
Yeah.
It's multiple timelines. We all know it.
So, what you said you worked on The Woman, you worked on John Dies on the end. What other projects have you worked on?
While I was at Bob's, we worked on a lot of low-budget stuff. We worked on this project called Raw 21 that, like, fell through. It was, like, this big-budget, futuristic cop, like, it was independent still, but they were shooting it in Michigan, and they had spent millions on all these costumes and robots and stuff, and then they just were like, no, we're not doing it anymore. Aww. And then so I got to see one of that firsthand, you know, one of those situations where it's like,
yeah,
they literally wasted millions of dollars.
Someday I hope someone recovers so many of these films that no one has ever seen like that.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just like, yeah, we shot 90% of it, and then 10%'s not done, and we never did post-production.
Yeah.
It's just sitting there.
No, it was an eye-opener to see that part of the industry. Yeah. And just how wasteful it can be. It's like, totally. Man, guys, come on. Like, and also learning, like, some productions are just shadier than others. It's like, mm-hmm. I literally learned, not working for Bob, but, like, other productions after that. Like, some film productions are literally laundering schemes. Mm-hmm. Like, just straight up, like, this is drug money. What do we do with it? We're going to make a movie. And that's how shitty movies get made. And you're like, I always wondered how that works. Yeah. It's drug money.
Sometimes they're just trying to get hostages escaping from a foreign country.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. Argo, fuck
Argo
yourself.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was a great... And John Chambers. Oh, my God. Or John Goodman playing John Chambers in that movie. That was fantastic. What a great movie.
They finally released all the original artwork.
Did they really?
Like, yeah. Heavy Metal magazine published
Wow. That is super cool.
That artwork no one had ever actually seen before.
Yeah.
That was, like, you know, never going to actually be made into stuff. But it was... what's his name from comic books? God damn it. Like, most... Jack Kirby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like... God
Wait,
damn.
Jack Kirby did drawings for them? Or, like, wow, that's pretty incredible. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he's actually... Jack Kirby is a character in the film briefly, but I can't
Is he really? I didn't know that. That's really cool. I love hearing about, like, Jack Kirby's secret art projects and, like, his amusement park projects and stuff that he was designing. Yeah, like, crazy stuff where you're like, oh, my God. He did everything.
He was a visionary.
Totally. Yeah, man.
Okay, so all of this... Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, Sci-Fi Channel show calls you and says, hey, you want to be on a reality show?
Yeah. So that came from, actually, my friend Ian Cromer, who I went to school with at Savini. He was on season 2, and he was a finalist, actually, and he did very well for himself on the show. And he was on it, and that had, you know, kicked him into gear and got him from the East Coast out to L.A. after he was on the show. And he was, like, kind of egging me on to do it, and... now that I've been on the show, I know that, like, you know, basically after they're done, they, like, you know, you basically can give them some names of people who you think, you know, are eligible to help their process. So they never said yes or no to this, but I'm pretty sure Ian, you know, basically recommended me because they came knocking on my door. I was never, ever going to apply for it. And they were like, hey, this is so-and-so from Face Off. You know, we're looking for people. Are you interested in trying out? Or, like, I don't think you've applied. Are you interested in applying? And I was like, no, not really. And they were like, why not? Da, 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 da. And this was the beginning of my career in Texas, you know, after that retail job and stuff. So I was like, kind of trying to figure out, like, okay, do I focus on my career? Do I do Face Off? Even though Face Off is your career, but not really, because you take time off to, like, get paid garbage to, you know, go be exploited on television.
Right.
So, so I was like, you know, what's the best choice here? And basically I ended up thinking, like, what do I have to lose? Like, I'm just starting out. Even if I do bad on the show, it's reality TV. They're going to do another season and then 10 after that. So, like, I'm going to be forgotten about very quickly. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just do it. So I did sent in an audition that I hated for season 3. And so I, like, cut the cord on that one. And then season 4 came along and they called back and they were like, hey, you know, whatever happened, did another one. And that one ended up getting to the producers. So they were like, you know, did the Skype interview with me and stuff and flew me out to Burbank for my live audition. So you do 2 auditions. You do the video one, and then you do a live one, 2 mm-hmm. different makeups that are totally yours. And then based off that, you know, they were like, it was like a month waiting, you know, like such a long drawn out stressful process and tons of paperwork. But I got the call right after I saw Mary Poppins for some reason. I don't know why I remember that.
On the street?
Yeah. I was, like, hanging out with Mary.
She's
we were
just,
at her
like,
buddy. Yeah. Hey, there's Mary. Oh, my phone's ringing.
It was a jolly holiday.
It really was.
Do you remember what you auditioned with?
It was 2 different makeups. One was, like, a bat creature character. Mm-hmm. Which wasn't a fleshed out character at all. It was just like I had my black hair and just like a bat face. Mm-hmm. And then And then I had another character when I went to Burbank that was like a, it was like a Brian Froudish type, like troll character.
Nice. I love Brian Froudish.
Oh my God. He's amazing.
Yeah.
So it was like this, like, you know, kind of bulbous, you know, it was a very caricature, troll makeup, silicone makeup. And I had made like the costume and stuff. And that was, I thought that was way more thought out. And that was the one that, that got me on the show. Cause it was really like, it had good movement. And I'm always, I'm from the school of like makeup effects. That's like the Dick Smith school of like, perfect edges, like
we all technically from the Dick Smith school.
I would like to think
all the way back.
I would like to think so, but I run into a lot of artists who don't know who that is. Actually,
that's makes me sad.
Yeah, it makes me sad too. But so that Dick Smith school of like fucking perfect, like it has to be perfect. Like my background on my iPad is F. Murray Abraham from Amadeus, like with the makeup on.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that makeup is like one of my favorite makeups ever because it's just so subtle and so beautiful, and like it's foam latex and, you know, now silicone would be used and it looks like a silicone makeup, and that's Dick Smith's work. So
you're saying some makeup artists go from the viewpoint of like you basically have storyboarded at what the makeup is going to be down to the last detail and you're recreating it, and some are just kind of winging it.
Yeah.
So like some people are like, you know, Robert Fripp, and some people are Jimmy Page.
No, absolutely. Well, that and like I do a healthy dose of both now. Like after being in the film industry for a few years, you do your healthy dose of like taking your time and then like going fucking crazy and pulling your hair out and trying to get stuff done before it needs to be done. But it's more so like there are the artists who know what it means to do a like very fleshed out, perfectly executed prosthetic makeup, and then there are those who do like creatures and monsters and just like, you know, where you don't have to have as fine tuned as a hand to like hide the seams and stuff, because like old age and character makeups, that's like if you mess up or if you make a wrong turn, it's going to be obvious, right? It's like you would think like, oh, the big crazy monsters and aliens, those are the more difficult thing to do, and it's like, no, it just takes more manpower.
Right.
It's the more subtle things that are more difficult to do because it takes more time, takes more thought, and it takes more just overall finessing.
We've seen it. We know what old people look like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you see somebody who's
so if you mess
like,
it up, yeah.
Yeah, just like brown lines on
Nothing drives me crazy more than really bad old age makeup.
Oh, me too.
And when it's in a film that had the budget to do better than that.
Uh-huh.
Like I thought that Wachowski Brothers film.
Cloud Atlas.
Mm. Which had some really great makeup and some really terrible makeup.
Oh. Yeah.
And with the old the age makeup bending. Was where it really... So the race bending makeup actually looked good. It was just... I was like, should I be offended? Yeah. I'm not even sure if this is offensive or not. But the makeup was good. It was just the old age makeup, and they were so bad. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, my God. What the fuck? We know the technology is better than this now.
There's a lot where it's just, it's like, you know, you have that facepalm moment of, one of them was, and I'm not here to shit on any makeup artist specifically.
Yeah, so, of course not.
So I want to say, well, also, I don't know the names of certain people, but I do know the makeups in the film. So, like, oh my God, what was it? It was Leonardo DiCaprio, and he played, who's the detective, the famous detective?
Sherlock Holmes?
No.
They said famous detective. Philip Marlowe?
Who was it?
Darkwing Duck?
Yes, Darkwing Duck. It was.
I love that movie.
Yeah, it was the duck makeup on Leonardo DiCaprio.
It was his first Oscar.
Yeah. Totally watch Leo play Darkwing Duck.
Oh my God,
he was
so good in that.
Don't get me started on Darkwing.
You could do the makeup.
Because I've always wanted to do a Darkwing costume.
That would be awesome.
God, I can't. Anyway, it was an old age makeup on Leo DiCaprio.
Shutter Island?
No, not Shutter Island. It was,
Why do I feel... Why? I should know this, right? We should all know this.
Yeah.
I'm gonna bring up
a... He plays a famous detective?
Or famous cop. It was a famous cop or detective. God, I'm gonna... Oh, when I remember the name, I'm gonna feel
is
like
it
an
the
idiot.
Scorsese film?
No. It was to the tip of my tongue.
Driving me crazy now.
I know,
anyway,
right?
Well, she'll figure it out.
I'll find it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, wasn't Shutter Island.
Oh, no, this will help. He was a cross-dresser. He was famously known as a cross-dresser. He was a cop.
J. Edgar.
J. Edgar Hoover.
Oh, yeah. FBI, yeah.
FBI. So he played J. Edgar Hoover in that.
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, and there's an age makeup in
they
that.
They tried to put, like, jowls on him.
Yeah, and it was, like, a super thick silicone, like, just, like... transformed his face. Well, I think they were trying to make him look like J. Edgar, and then they just totally just flopped it up. Because, like, there are a lot of character makeups, like the one in that Bryan Cranston just did, where he played, God, it was a president he played.
Yeah, LBJ. I thought it looked great.
Incredible makeup. Yeah. And just enough. They didn't, like, bury him under prosthetics. It was like they just, you know, enhanced his nasolabial folds. They gave him a little bit bigger of a nose. They pushed out his ears a little bit.
Kevin Spacey doing Nixon in Elvis.
Yeah.
And
oh, my gosh. That was amazing. So good. Yeah.
That did so much to just work with his natural skills. And
yeah.
Where it was just that right subtle. It didn't need to be a total overhaul.
No, absolutely.
You know? It just accented where necessary. To where you're like, okay, that's Nixon.
And I don't know about the Nixon makeup. The genius behind Bryan Cranston's makeup was Bill Corso, who did. He did the makeup in Deadpool, and he did the makeup in Lemony Snicket's Series of Unfortunate Events, and just, like, he's an Oscar-winning makeup artist. He's amazing. But he's the type of makeup artist, him and, like, Greg Canham, who did, like, Mrs. Doubtfire and Titanic and Benjamin Button. Like, he built his career on old-age makeups, Greg Canham did.
Which has come a long way in the last 15 years.
A long way. But also, like, you know, it's come a long way, but still there were guys 30, 40, 50 years ago, like Dick Smith, doing it right out the gate, like fucking, like in The Exorcist.
True.
You know, doing it incredibly, like, just to the T. And you know, no one could touch him for the longest time until silicone was a thing. And it was like, well, now we can make our skin prosthetics look like skin. But he was doing it before that even existed, you know, making an opaque material look translucent and feel like a living tissue. It was just, like, incredible.
So are you, like, if you had your, like, I'm going to do whatever I want,
mm-hmm.
Where would you be? Would you be making creatures? Would you be making, like, more subtle? Or would you be making, like gore effects?
Yeah. That's a great question, because I'm kind of at that crossroads at the moment where I'm trying to figure out, like, do I want to do, you know, indie stuff and make monsters, or do I want to, like, focus on being a makeup on-set makeup artist, you know, doing prosthetics and stuff. So I feel like I'm finding a good healthy dose of the two, though. Like, my where I would love to be is, like, doing my own little boutique shop thing where I do just the jobs that I want to do, you know, and taking on the jobs that I want to do creatively, and also, you know, if they have the right budget attached to them. but you know, doing a really good dose of old age, you know, realistic type stuff, and also doing creature stuff. Maybe not, like, I wouldn't go out of my comfort zone. Like, I wouldn't build giant robotic Tyrannosaurus Rexes, like, let's say.
And that's a team effort.
That's a very much. And usually, like, when there's animatronics involved or characters of that extent, there's engineers involved to some extent.
Yeah, there's
and, not just artists.
Jeff Goldblum.
And Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. and a Jeff Goldblum, yep.
You didn't stop long enough to ask if you should.
Which Jeff Goldblum is actually just an animatronic character. Yeah,
like,
that's why.
Well, you can tell when he's, like, stuttering. When it's like, somebody kick him.
Uh-huh.
His eye.
You can see a spark fly out of his ear, and you're like, oh, man.
So what would be a dream project for you?
Ooh, that's a great question.
No limit on budget or materials or manpower.
Humphrey Bogart comes back from the dead and decides to play Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. I would have to say, like, you remember the Fly remake?
Mm-hmm.
I would love to do something like The Fly, where you have, like, there's, like, beautiful creature makeups, but they're so well thought out, and they look, even though you don't know what a man transforming to fly would look like, that's what it looks like. When you see it, you're like, oh, that's what it looks like.
I think Cronenberg was completely a visionary and a game changer when it came to doing, like, his vision of what special effects and body effects
absolutely
were going to be in film.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody, you just can't touch the still viscerally disturbing images from stuff like The Brood or Rabbit.
Oh my God.
Like, all this early stuff where you're like, fuck, man, how did you come up? Did you wake up screaming?
Yeah.
And dreamed that?
He starts drawing.
It's the same with like H.R. Geiger and all of the influences of, which, I went to this last 2 years, actually. I have this job in Germany where I get to go do makeup for, like, this haunted attraction event. And we're very close to the, like, French, German, Swiss borders. So we went to Gruyère, Switzerland, which is where H.R. Geiger's studio is. And the Geiger Bar is right across the street from it. And, like, before you even get to that, it's just a beautiful, like, Swiss village up in the mountain or up in the hills, and it's absolutely breathtaking. But then you're like, you keep walking up this alley, and you're like, this is looking not quite as, like, quite as cute anymore. And there's just, like, these women with these steel boobs, like, you know, and then the babies and the gun and stuff. And you're like, okay, we made it, you know.
We're in the right place.
Yeah, here it is.
And I'm at peace.
And it's like a 3-4-story, you know, like, museum of all of his work, originals, and some are prints, but a lot of them are originals. And it's just, that's a life-changing for any artist, filmmakers, you know, people who work with their hands, people who just make music or who love film, like any kind of artist, they need to go see his work. It's so incredible.
Now, I believe you just got a solid new gig.
Yes, yeah.
Can you talk about that a bit?
I did. I just got into the Makeup Artists Union in Texas, and Texas, Oklahoma has their own. So I got into that union, which means I get to work on bigger, more funded projects, big studio projects now. And the big studio project in town in Austin right now is The Sun from AMC, which is based on a book. But Pierce Brosnan is starring in it, and it's basically about, it takes place in like the mid to late 1800s, and it's about a man who gets, he gets abducted by Comanches at a very young age. He's like a young Texas boy, and he gets abducted by Comanches and then raised by them as well. So he gets put back into like Texas, you know, civilian life, and he's kind of dealing with like his Comanche, you know, tendencies and like wanting to like scout people,
so it's
and do
Pierce Brosnan with a Texas Comanche accent.
Yes,
that's
he plays the
titular son. Yeah. And he I haven't heard his accent. I haven't met him yet. I've been doing a lot of shop work, not a lot, a little bit, but I've been making like props and stuff for them, doing molds and that kind of thing for the prop department. So a lot of shop work, but still awesome. Like a huge step for me as far as like making more of a living out of things, because I've been doing more like, indie stuff, which is, I like, Austin has a much stronger indie film scene than anyone will admit, which I don't know why, but, it is a great, great film scene, and, has been my bread and butter for the last like 4 years. So, I love it to death. And the great thing about Texas Union is it's right to work. So I don't have to exclusively do union work. I get to still do my fun indie films and then get paid really, really well when
I want to. What kind of effects are you doing on The Sun?
Nothing like, no like blood effects or anything like that. I'm doing mostly props. At least that's what I was doing this last week. And then if I do get called out on makeup, I'll probably be doing like Comanche makeup, like doing extras makeup or something like that. Cause it's such a large scale. Right. Like pretty much every makeup artist who's unionized is working on it at the moment. So it's like kind of a roster thing. It's like, you know, going down there, figuring out who's available and who isn't, and just kind of jumping on board and doing whatever the heck they need you to do at any given moment.
That's awesome. When is that supposed to come out?
That is supposed to come out. That's a good question. I know that they're doing, they ordered a full season, and the season is going to, entire first season is going to be shot here. So I'd imagine sometime next year they'll probably
have
a premiere.
I feel like some stars only take certain productions because it means they get to have barbecue for 6 months.
Right? Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
A lot of people, and I've actually had people tell me, no, that was half of my reasoning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, we're going to be in Austin?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Can we go to Franklin?
Can we go to Franklin? Yeah.
Every day.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, so let me ask you one more question before we wrap this up.
Please.
If you're, let's say, a 13-year-old kid or something listening to this, and you're like, man, I love horror movies, or maybe I love the Star Wars cantina scene,
yeah.
or whatever, and I'm like, I would love to do this, but I don't even know where to start. What is your advice to somebody who's like, I think I want to learn more about this and learn how to do this and do take the first steps? What are those first steps?
The first steps, I would say, are even at, like, if you're like me and you didn't have like an incredible amount of like art training when you decided you want to do this, make something that you love, like it, whether if it's like a replica or like a cosplay even of like your favorite character, figure out how to make that thing and do the best version of that you can. Like, it doesn't matter if you made it out of like plastic bags and like, you know, tape and hot glue, like just make that thing as well as you can make it and learn from that process. And if you can survive that first process of just like killing yourself to make something that you want to see materialize so badly and you still love it after that, then you're made for it. So just pick a project you know you're going to be passionate about and see it through all the way.
Right on.
Yeah.
Can you tell people where they can find you online to follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. I'm at EricZapata89. And then you can also find me on Twitter. I'm EasyMUFX. And then on Facebook, too, you can follow me as well.
Right on.
Yeah.
Eric, I really thank you for coming in. This is
thank
like
you so much.
Right up my alley talking to a special effects guy.
This is great.
Guy, so.
Yeah.
I was just sitting back letting you guys have it.
We're all
just
geeking
like,
out.
I like Face Off. Yeah. I watched you on the TV.
When I first heard of Face Off, I was so excited because I was like, they're making a movie out of that really bizarre John Woo film or TV series. I'm like, I'll totally watch the shit out of that. That's going to be bizarre. Oh, it's a reality show.
Yeah.
But then it's pretty good. So, yeah.
Well, I'd be on that version on the show, too.
I feel like I thought, you know, I'm like, you know what? They want to get a lot of viewers. They need to end a season with the final challenges. They actually bring in Nicolas Cage and John Travolta, and you have to make up one, each one to look like the other.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing.
The ultimate makeup challenge.
Yeah. When the new season came out and I, like, announced it on Facebook, I was like, guys, I'm on the next season as well. Here's the trailer. Check it out. And I just posted the Face Off trailer in the movie. No one liked it. They were like, yeah, we know that joke. And I'm like, yeah, but it's really funny still.
That's always funny.
Yeah.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you guys so much.